Committee on Education and General Government. And I want to just make one quick announcement. We will not be hearing House Bill 2570 today, and we will hear House Bill 3118 at the end of this hearing after we take care of some other business. And we will begin today with House Joint Memorial 10, public hearing and work session. Representative Gelser is here.
Would you like a quick summary, Mr. Chair?
A quick summary from Ms. Richardson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 10 urges Congress to amend Section 529 of the Internal Revenue Code to allow accounts and qualified tuition programs to be used for repayment of student loans.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Sarah Gelser, representative from Corvallis and Philomath. Happy to be in your education committee this afternoon. Hope yours is less eventful than mine was this afternoon. House Joint Memorial 10 is a memorial to Congress to urge them to change the Federal Revenue Code to allow families who were hit by the extraordinary losses and the 529 savings plan conservative funds to be able to still go to college, take out a loan, and use proceeds from their 529 college savings plan to pay off that loan. It is a short-term temporary fix that would allow these families at or near college age to not be forced to withdraw all of their money to pay for tuition at a point when they've made those losses and there isn't enough money left to pay tuition. There are other states that are also sending this memorial forward to Congress. We've worked with Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley and Treasurer Westland on this bill, and I would urge your support.
Thank you. Questions? None. Well, why don't we do this? If you can just stand by, Representative, because we need you for another bill, and call up Michael Parker and Michael Silvaggio, the Treasurer's Office. Welcome, gents.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, Michael Parker, for the record, director of the Oregon 529 College Savings Network. I will just echo what Representative Gelser said regarding HJM 10. I just wanted to let the committee know kind of what the current rule is and why this is an important change. Under Section 529 of the Internal Revenue Code, the current rule basically has been interpreted by the states that you have to use your 529 assets for expenses incurred in the current calendar year. The code is actually kind of unclear on this, but states have been very conservative, not wanting to anger the IRS, and we also follow that rule in the state of Oregon. So we tell our investors, you know, when you're taking a distribution, it is for the current calendar year. The IRS and U.S. Treasury are currently looking at proposing a rule that would actually say use 529 distribution for current calendar year expenses or up until March 31st of the succeeding year. We would love to see that be the academic calendar year, which only makes sense, but right now they're proposing up until March 31st. So we definitely support this bill. We are working also with Senators Wyden and Merkley to make sure that Congress does look at this provision. We think it's important that parents have a chance, investors have a chance to let their accounts recover from the devastating market climate in 08 and early 09. So from the Treasurer's Office, we certainly support this this memorial. Thank you.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Silvaggio, Office of the State Treasurer. Actually, I'm only here to answer any questions which Mr. Parker cannot, and as he seems quite capable, I don't imagine that he's going to come up.
I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Silvaggio that Mr. Parker doesn't know. What question might that be? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
What is truth?
Why is there error?
To blow up basketballs and volleyballs. Yes.
You remember sure. That.
Yeah, I know.
Sure, Hass, I'll check with counsel and get back to you.
We are in a work session on HJ 10.
Mr. Chair, I move that HJM 10 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Senator Morse moves that HJM 10 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? Seeing none. So ordered. carriers?
I'd be happy to carry it.
Member Bonamici, thank you. We'll close the work session on HJM 10 and open up a, thank you, gentlemen, open up a work session on House Bill 2507A. You might remember this from last week, Senator Walker and Representative Gelser. And Dana, we have a new amendment.
We do, the dash A6s. This is the modified diploma bill, members. And, well, I'll quickly run through it. Maybe I'll save Representative Gelser just a minute in doing that. It specifies that school districts or public charter schools may not deny a student who has a documented history of an inability to meet academic content standards for a diploma with reasonable modifications and accommodations the opportunity to pursue a diploma with more stringent requirements than either the modified or extended diploma. It permits the school district to grant modified or extended diplomas only upon the consent of the student's parent or guardian. It substitutes the criteria for the modified diplomas that are in the bill, the A bill, as criteria for extended high school diplomas. Let's see. And as with the other amendments we had before, as it removes the new language, it specifies the compatibility with IDEA. We do have revenue and fiscal statements on this. There's no revenue generated by it. There's a fiscal statement issued indicating that the fiscal is indeterminate and likely minimal.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gelser, you met with Senator Walker and Senator Cruz, I understand, and
yes.
Worked out this.
Thank you, Senator Hastings. We and members of the committee, and I'm still Sarah Gelser from House District 16 in Corvallis. Still, maybe tomorrow I'll change my identity. I have had the opportunity to speak with Senator Cruz, Senator Morse, and Senator Walker. The Dash 6 amendment blends some of the elements of my previous amendment and Senator Walker's previous amendment. I also spent some time earlier today speaking with Ms. Reed, who is the parent that testified to you last time. The primary change from when I brought this before you last time is the addition in this amendment that parental consent must be given before either a modified or an extended diploma is granted. The other thing that we've done, we've been able to clarify that with the standardization that financial aid is available to individuals who receive a modified diploma. I think I succeeded in thoroughly confusing everyone last time I was here, so I gave you a chart which really describes that this would limit. Right now, there are endless possibilities of how you can leave school. This limits it to four different options that I have laid out for you in that chart.
Right.
And I hope you will pass the bill because it's a really good one.
Questions?
So,
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gelser, you said there's four different options under the bill, but there are many now. So what's available now that's not on your chart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici. Right now, local school districts can choose what to call certificates that students leave with. Before the 2007 bill, the statute and the rule allowed school districts to define the criteria for a modified diploma or some other type of an alternative diploma. What we've done is say you can issue a modified diploma, but it must meet these criteria. We thought that we fixed that problem in 2007, but the rules that the department adopted allowed students all the way up through, I forget if it was 2012 or 2013, to continue receiving these certificates in however a local school district would define that to be. This says after July 1st of this year, these are the only options that school districts can issue. That's important because nothing is standardized if you have exceptions out there that are called the same thing that have different requirements added to them.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gelser. I still have some issues with the whole modified diploma concept, and I had a conversation with Representative Gelser earlier, and we will work on that in the interim, but this bill does actually get to what we thought we were getting to 2 years ago, so I think it's appropriate, and there will be more fine-tuning to be done in the future, but I'm satisfied that this is, at this point in the session, best we can do.
Further questions? Okay, we're in a work session, Senator Morse.
Mr. Chair, I moved the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2507.
Senator Morse moves the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2507. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2507A engrossed be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Morse moves the House Bill 2507A engrossed be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. The bill will go with the due pass recommendation, and Senator Cruz will carry it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, I will close the work session on 2507, and you're dyslexic like me, and you see 2570 right under that. Try to your files scattered about, as I did. And I will open up a hearing on House Bill 2217. Dana?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2217 expands those that the State Parks and Rec Department may require fingerprints of to include department licensees, persons responsible for the sale or distribution of tickets or other instruments that can be exchanged for goods or services or access to events on department property, and persons with key access to buildings and grounds that contain private property. It repeals the current statute relating to criminal records checks that could be conducted by the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, which has been abolished.
Very good.
Good afternoon, Chair House and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Van Landen. I'm the Assistant Director for Administrative Services for Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And I'm here today seeking your support in passing House Bill 2217, which is really providing us the authority at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to conduct these fingerprint criminal history checks on employees that were formerly State Fair employees, which have been transferred over to the Oregon Department of Recreation. During the session, all agencies were given the statute of authority based on business criteria to conduct these types of fingerprint criminal history checks. And then, as Ms. Richardson just mentioned here, the State Fair later that session was transferred over to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and we no longer have the authority to conduct these fingerprint criminal history checks on the State Fair employees who are now Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. So with that, I just wanted to answer any questions you may have and seek your support in passing this bill.
Okay. And you may not know this, but this is not our first fingerprinting bill, is it?
I did not know
that. Experience. Senator Cruz?
Yes. Why are you doing a fingerprint check rather than a let's check?
Chair Huff and Senator Cruz, we currently do the fingerprint checks. This is just an addition for the specified areas. If we elected to do the fingerprint, it would be in addition to the LEDS criminal history checks we do.
Okay. So
we just don't have the authority to do the fingerprint portion if we elected to do that.
Oh, so this is... Okay.
It's a cleanup.
So we do that
on every one of them currently.
Standard is just a LEDS check.
Yes.
This is
just in addition to if we elected to do so. Thank you. Yeah, good clarifying question.
The fiscal difference is significant.
Significant.
Yes, okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's specific to just a few of the folks we would do these on.
Okay.
Further questions? Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this? I don't see anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2217 and open up a work session on House Bill 2217.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2217 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves that House Bill 2217 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the motion carries with a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor, and I will carry that bill.
Thank you all for your time.
I'll close the hearing on House Bill 2217. And do we have our people here for this?
Yes.
I will open up a work session on House Bill 3116.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is another look at the bill dealing with the Blue Mountain Community College District and Rogue Community College District, allowing them to incur bonded indebtedness. You have a Dash 1 amendment before you that would add the same capabilities or flexibility to Columbia Gorge and Southwestern Oregon Community College Districts. There is no fiscal impact from the amendment, and there is no revenue impact from the amendment, and I believe Karen from OCCA is here if there are questions on the amendment.
Karen, would you like to come up?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say this is a very good amendment. It covered a potential hole, and I think it makes it a better bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Smith. I'm the general counsel of the Oregon Community College Association. We did work with Senator Cruz to refine the Dash 1 amendments, which would add the other two districts that have expanded from their original district that was created. Both Southwestern and Columbia Gorge have added or annexed counties that were adjacent to their districts. And they would like to have the same option that the other two expansion districts, Rogue and Blue Mountain Community College, have to take bond measures either to their entire district as a whole or to the areas that are annexed and in this bill would now be defined as service areas. This is important for these two districts that are relatively new in annexing these counties. And, for example, for Southwestern, they annexed Curry County, which is quite a distance from Coos County. And if they'd like to create a take a bond out to build a building in Curry County, they'd have a much better chance of doing that if they can just take that question to Curry County, because Coos County is so far removed that the voters in that area may not have an affinity or want to take on the burden of a bond measure. And so this would give them the option if it makes sense for their district. And their local board would make that decision. Their locally elected board would make that decision. And so this just adds those two districts.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could. It is interesting when this came up. That was my first thought, because Southwestern is in Coos Bay, which is at the north end of Coos County, and the satellite is in Brookings, which is at the south end of Curry County, and the distance is long and the road is not really all that good, and I know that the folks in Curry County would like to have the option, and the folks in Coos County shouldn't be subject to having to deal with that. And Plus, there's a disproportionality in population in both counties, and so unless Curry County had the option, I'm sure Coos County would never allow them to do it. And so this sort of flexibility, I think, is good for the system.
Just one question as an aside. This brings these boundary issues makes me think that Clackamas and Portland, for example, is there overlap there?
Mr. Chair, it's not an issue for the other community college districts, because when they were formed, their boundaries were set as an entire district. So they represent portions of, in the metro area in particular, you would represent, you know, PCC has a portion of Multnomah and Washington, and there's some overlap with Mount Hood and Clackamas. But when those districts were formed, they were formed as complete districts. They don't have defined service areas like we have for the expansion districts. For example, Chemeketa is in Marion, Polk, parts of Yamhill, and parts of Lynn, but they've always been in those four counties.
What do they do when they vote on a levy in those overlap areas?
They work with our county elections officers to figure out which precincts fall within their district. Okay. And then the vote is a vote of the whole. All of the votes together are counted.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you.
We're in work session.
We are in a work
session. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3116.
Senator Morse moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3116. Discussion? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3116 as amended be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves that House Bill 3116 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Measure passes. Senator Cruz.
Two in a row.
He's taught today.
Then they come to a screeching halt. It usually does.
Okay, we are at 3518.
Can we stand at ease for a minute before we go there?
Stand at ease for 2 minutes?
Yeah, just to have a conversation.
Sure.
You see on his way.
session, and I will open up a public hearing in 3118A. Representative Greenlake and Sam Sachs, come up.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlake, House District 33, and I appreciate you hearing this bill. I'm here to talk to you about it and to support the A5 amendments that you have in front of you as well.
Excuse me, Representative. I'm so sorry. Our administrator was going to go over the 3 points.
I'm sorry. I thought you knew what you're doing.
I still have trouble remembering, and it's the last day of the
skipped
session.
Over that, and it's one of her best summary statements of the session.
The Dash A5s define a minority, and they actually pull from another existing statute for that definition. They, like the bill, require public institutions of higher education to interview one or more qualified minority applicants for head coaching and athletic director positions. They do provide an exception if the institution is unable to identify a qualified applicant who's willing to interview for the position. And it also provides that an institution could use as an affirmative defense the fact that they could not identify a qualified minority applicant, and it sunsets the requirement to reach out and identify minority applicants as of January 2nd, 2020. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So there were three important changes, the affirmative defense, definition of minorities, and a sunset date on this.
Exactly.
Sorry, Representative.
Thank you very much. I'll let Mr. Sachs do most of the talking, but I think this is an important bill. I really do believe in colorblind hiring, as I was talking to one of your members earlier in the day, and I think this bill moves that process of being able to have colorblind hearing a step forward. In order to have colorblind hearing, you have to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to get into the game. These coaches are all jocks. All I want is a chance to compete, and they think if they have a chance to compete, then they'll have a fair chance of winning, and that's basically what we're asking for here. You have two letters and an email in front of you in support of this, one from Bob DeCarlos, the AD at Oregon State, one from Mike Pilotti, the AD at the University of Oregon, and what I think is a very interesting letter from LaVonda Wagner, the women's basketball head coach at Oregon State. And I think, let me read the last paragraph of her letter, because I think that's said more eloquently than I can possibly say it. It says, I've spent time watching other minorities in the athletic profession work towards their professional goals. I've also tried to do my best to help these young coaches and administrators to become the best that they can be. I believe very strongly in creating opportunities to mentor and to lead these young people so they can continue to pursue their dreams. House Bill 3118 will provide another avenue for qualified minorities to develop their skills and to work towards eventually becoming a head coach or athletic director. This bill is an important piece of legislation, and I hope it will soon be passed and become law. These folks who are in the business understand we're moving in this direction, but we haven't quite moved far enough. The NCAA is working towards setting up procedures like this. We would be in advance of doing that for our state universities, and I hope you will hear this bill, work it, and move it to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Sachs.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is, for the record, my name is Sam Sachs, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here today. I want to thank Representative Greenlake and Senator Suzanne Bonamici for the willingness to co-sponsor this important piece of legislation. and bringing it forward to you. I also want to thank the House and many of the Republican representatives and Democrats that I had an opportunity to speak with and their support. Some of the amendments that were created on the House side, one of the amendments, a qualified minority candidate, came from Representative Springer in a discussion I had with her. So there's been a lot of input into this legislation from both sides, Republicans and Democrats. So I want to thank everybody for that. House Bill 3118 grew out of my frustration, I guess, in watching the seasonal hiring and firing of football coaches that happens in this country. And usually when someone is fired, then there's an interview process. Those interviews are usually very quick. Portland State University, for instance, in 2007, requested a speedy waiver. They had the job open for about 3 days. They interviewed two people, and they hired Coach Glanville. This is more the norm than the exception, the speedy waivers and the process that takes place in replacing these coaches. And the reason it's important is that nearly 50% of all the players in the NCAA football programs are minorities, nearly 50%. About 46 to 47% of them are African American. And out of 120 programs in the NCAA at Division I level, there are only nine minority coaches. I believe six or seven of those are African American. So I wanted to be part of the solution. I wanted to do something here in Oregon to change that practice, to ensure that every time a coaching position came open in football, that everyone would get an opportunity, all qualified candidates, and to include minorities. And so that's where the bill started, was with football originally. And the idea I got was from the Rooney Rule, which is in effect in the National Football League. It was implemented in 2003 because of the same reasons or the same concerns that there was a disparity of football players, minority players, and versus coaches. Since the implementation of the Rooney Rule in 2003, minority hiring has gone up 22%. And it's only since 2003. It was the first time we saw two African-American coaches in the Super Bowl. One of them was the first, Tony Dungy, to win the Super Bowl. Two of the last four coaches to win the Super Bowl have been African-American. So the Rooney Rule works. It simply asks that every time a position comes open, a head coaching position comes open, that institution take the time to interview at least one qualified minority candidate. And since this bill was born, it was also added to athletic directors. And I'll just read a statistic that was done by, there's two racial report cards that happen yearly. One is done by the Black Coaches Association that details the disparity of minority coaches versus participants, and the other is done by TIDES, it's University of Central Florida, Dr. Richard Lapchick. It says 100% of the 11 football bowl subdivision conference commissioners are white men. Whites dominate the head coaching ranks on men's teams, holding 89, 89, and 93% of all those positions at Division 1, 2, and 3, respectively. The numbers are similar in women's teams. The 88, 89, and 92% head coaching positions in Division 1, 2, and 3. Whites held an overwhelmingly percentage of athletic director positions in all three divisions, 90%, 92%, and 97%. So I believe that this legislation is important in giving minorities an opportunity to interview for these positions. The report cards show that they're not getting those opportunities to interview for these positions. As Representative Greenlick stated, there's in my process of bringing this forward, I've reached out to Athletic Director Mike Bellotti, Bob DeCarolis, John Kerry, all the athletic directors that this would affect, and coaches, and all of them support it. There's letters from Athletic Director Bellotti, DeCarolis, and as Representative Greenlick stated, LaVonda Wagner, Coach Ernie Kent also supports this bill. And I think it's an important piece of legislation and that it gives opportunity. What this bill does is it just requires the institution to give one interview. It doesn't discriminate against anyone. It doesn't discriminate against white males. It doesn't have a penalty to it other than what the statute is, which is under the higher education. And I do think that it will make the pools of candidates greater. As Eastern Oregon Athletic Director Cashel said, he was quoted earlier in the process saying that he believes it will bring more candidates to the pool. So I don't think the problem of finding minority candidates will be, I don't think that will be a problem. I think it will actually make the pools greater and give greater recognition to the state of Oregon. And I think Oregon has an opportunity to lead the way on this. It should, before I close, should be noted that the Athletic Directors Association has a memo of understanding that they encourage this practice, but they go short. Recently adopted a memo of acceptable standards for interviewing head coaches. It states, interviewing candidates for head coaching positions should include one or more minority candidates for that position, resulting in a formal interview opportunity. But, again, it's just a suggestion. Senate President Cody has also put into, I believe, as a resolution in the state of New Jersey on the same thing. So I believe that this will happen eventually, and I hope that it'll happen here in the state of Oregon. If you have any questions, I'm ready to take those.
Questions? Senator Cruz?
Well, I'll just make a comment and then allow you gentlemen to respond to it, because I was considering a minority report, which is a little strange for this bill. But
should have at least one minority report.
I've got more than one. And my minority report was basically looking at, and I'm fully acknowledging the issue here. My minority report would basically have been to acknowledge the fact that our universities in the state, I think, are maybe ahead of a lot of other universities in a lot of other states in their minority hiring, and to acknowledge that and also to encourage them to continue the practice. So it was more of an affirmative statement rather than you must.
Well, I think we've done pretty well in basketball, and I think it's true probably across the nation where there are more minority head coaches in basketball. But it's really, I don't think we have done very well in basically any of the other sports or in terms of our ADs. But there's obviously the will to do it, and it seems to me we're just going to be encouraging that will. Let me say that as an academic department chair, as I was at Oregon Health Sciences University over this time, I had to follow these same procedures. But the university has procedures about interviewing and seeking out minority candidates. And sometimes I was able to do it, and sometimes I wasn't. When I wasn't, I asked for a waiver. But at the University of Oregon, for example, the last six coaching jobs in a row, they've asked for a waiver before trying to find minority candidates from what are basically university procedures. So this is really fits into what an academic department chair has to do as well. I mean, our job is to go out and find minority candidates and do the best we can. And that's all anybody is expected to do. It's expected to do the best you can, make a good faith effort. And if you can't, then fine, you ask for a waiver.
Representative, we look at the statute, Ms. Richardson and I, on the work plan that the universities have and that waiver issue, and that the athletic departments routinely do look for those waivers. And we're wondering, and I'm not suggesting this, but whether that's another way to go about this, just not to allow athletic departments to receive waivers.
Well, it would seem to me there needs to be room for waivers if the ADs made a good faith effort to try and find a qualified minority candidate and can't. And I think it's very appropriate to say, here's what I've done, here's where I've advertised, here's the people that I've talked to. I really haven't turned out a qualified candidate. I don't want to get anybody. I want to make sure we have a qualified candidate, and that's what this bill says. If they made a good faith effort, they ought to be able to have a waiver. But you ought not get a waiver before you start. I mean, it ought to be after you've tried a little bit.
Further questions? Senator Metzger.
Well, he wants to talk.
Chairman, Hass and Senator Cruz, if I could just touch on your comment. There's a, in Bob DeCarolis's letter, he says, let me find it here. While there has been some progress in this area, and he's talking about the hiring of and interviewing of minority candidates, there's still much room for improvement, therefore the need for 3118. Bob DeCarolis is, I would say, one of the athletic directors leading the way in this area, and he still believes that there's a need for this bill. He's him and other athletic directors that I've talked to, they're doing this in some instances, but not completely. And the issue of the waiver, I don't think taking, there are some certain instances where waivers are needed to speed up the process. Unfortunately, it's become more the norm than the exception. And with this bill, the schools can still get those waivers, but they need to at least interview one minority candidate. And I believe that's the real issue, is to make sure that these institutions are making a conscious effort to interview minority applicants.
Senator Metz. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment and then a question. You know, one of the things that I would be concerned about, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, is set up a reverse situation in which someone feels that I'm the, you know, token interview, as opposed to, do you really want me, you know? And when you have that, is that person really feeling like you're really recruiting me to come in because you're interested in my skill set, as opposed to, I'm here to be, to meet a qualification? So that would be one thing I would be concerned about, because I do believe, especially in our institutions, and they have been very progressive on that, trying to find good candidates. And I wouldn't want to do something in which someone felt other than their skills were why they're coming forward. That was my comment. The question would be is a few years ago, and I think, well, Senator Cruz, I know, and Senator Morris were here in my committee, and I introduced a bill that we eventually passed in a different form, concerned about the behavior of athletes at Oregon State University at that time, if you might recall, that was a football team.
I do.
And I had Mr. DeCarolis here and others about that, and maybe similar to this, acknowledged there was an issue, but was wondering whether the prescription that I had in my particular bill was the best way to go, and that directing the university system and to develop their own standards might be a better way to go. And might actually be better. And I took that approach, as you recall, and direct them. They had to set up, in this case, standards and conduct and to do that. And the end result was, and by the way, you know, very wonderful athletes. You don't see them getting in trouble now at Oregon State University. They actually developed a code and a standard that was tougher than what my bill did on their own, because, you know, the spotlight was, we need to develop a standard that works, that demonstrates this. And I guess my question would be, would it be better to require that the university system develop a way in which they will increase the participation and, you know, potential hiring of minority coaches, and require that to be adopted by the higher board of education? I kind of wonder if you might actually even get a more comprehensive product than the prescription one of this bill that maybe, you know, may look like it's not totally embraced by those who are putting forward. At least that was my experience in that, and they put together a code of conduct and penalties that really elevated them far beyond what I attempted to do at that time. I was just curious as to that approach.
Well, let me comment first on your comment, which is an important one. We specifically asked the executive director of the Black Coaches Association whether they would view this as tokenism and whether they would want to be have this opportunity to be interviewed, even if it was viewed as a token. Their answer was absolutely. Give us a chance. That's all we're asking for. So even if somebody thinks it's a token, if we can compete, we're going to have a fighting chance, and this is a chance we want. Story on the Pittsburgh Steelers hiring of a head football coach 3 years ago was that they had decided in advance there were two white assistant coaches, and they were going to hire one of them. Because of the Rooney Rule, they had a minority coach. He knocked the ball out of the park,
got the job, and won the Super Bowl in 2 years. And it's again, these folks are athletes, and they what they're looking for is a chance. And they think if they're given an equal playing field and they're given a chance to compete, they don't care whether it's thought of as tokenism. They want a chance to compete. There are affirmative action rules in the universities that are constitutional and that encourage us to do these things. I think what the Corrales is saying is that give us a little extra boost from outside and we'll take care of the problem, because it isn't that complicated, the problem. It's really pretty straightforward. So I would simply say this, I think, provides a boost and helps them do what I think they know is the right thing to do.
Chairman,
I just need to comment on the Steelers thing, because I think there was a divided locker room on those two assistant coaches. So there were other factors that played in there. Clearly, Tomlin was a heck of a hire for them, but I think there was some internal politics as far as the division of the team, and that allowed them to not have a divided team. We talked about that. So
yeah, and this gave him an easy shot out, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Chairman Hass, members of the Education Committee, I don't want to get off on the Steelers because we'll be here all day.
It's my favorite team. My committee.
I just want to touch on the tokenism. Couple things. First of all, I think that having the word qualified takes away from the tokenism. I guess there's always going to be token interviews, whether it's minorities or non-minorities. That's going to happen. I think the greater impact or the worst thing is that these candidates that are minorities aren't getting these interviews most of the time, a lot of the times based on their race. So when you ask them which one's worse, tokenism or, you know, working for 25 years as an assistant and never getting an opportunity, they would probably say the latter. I want to read just a quick statement. This was a report, article written by Ted Miller, ESPN. He says, "I've never met anyone who knows about the inner workings of big-time football schools who doesn't believe the process of hiring a head football coach is stacked against minority candidates. When I tell you it is, I'm not saying it's my opinion. It's the fact. I know this sounds dogmatic, but I get weary of folks acting like this is a debate. I've talked to more than a few assistant coaches, black assistant coaches, about this through the years. When asked if they'd be bothered by the specter of a token interview, nearly all said, heck no. Why would you turn down an interview for your dream job, even if you knew you were the longest of shots? Heck no. You'd go in there full of bravado, be prepared to the hilt, and knock the interview out of the park. Nothing is more American than that." And this is from a reporter that reports on these issues and talks with assistant coaches all the time. And to them, it's not tokenism, it's an opportunity. And the other issue about relying on the institutions to do something, with all due respect to the institution, I think Bob DeCarolis and Mike Blatt are doing a wonderful job in their hiring, but I think more needs to be done. And the Black Coaches Association and Dr. Richard Lapchick have been putting out these racial report cards for nearly 10 years, and no one yet has... With all due respect, this information isn't new information to them. They know about it. They've seen it year in and year out. And still, they haven't done anything to change it. I think this could be the motivation, and they all seem to support this motivation to do something. The other issue is that...
standing beside them and adjournment. So.
What's that?
I say you're all standing between them and adjournment.
Oh, okay. The other issue is that it has a sunset. I think 5-10 years now, when the sun sets on this bill, God willing, then we'll look back and we'll say, of course, we really never, we've come so far. And I think this will be the thing that changes not only here in Oregon, but I think across the country. So if you have any other comments.
No, thank you both for coming, and your testimony is on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Amendment, which replaces...
And Sandy wants you.
Dash five amendment. Which
they're waiting for me to finish my committee.
Thank you.
Okay, you can have him back. All right, committee. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Senator Morris?
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, I have been lukewarm about this bill. And I don't know whether it's, you know, maybe it's perspective and denial, but it seems like that we have come so far that we are approaching that colorblind society. We have a president who's black at Oregon State University. They've done a wonderful job. And it seems, and my concern is that the more that we perpetuate this kind of legislation, is it taking us backward rather than forward? And that may sound like a strange comment.
Mm-hmm.
But visiting with our good colleague from Salem, she shared an experience in the Corvallis community, and of course I represent Corvallis, and I represent Oregon State University, and these letters are very meaningful. But she shared an experience that her grandchildren had, and there was a sign that was put up in the high school that said "Whites Only," and some considerable effort to get the recognition by the appropriate authorities to deal with that issue. And I guess it drives home the point that, no, we are not there. We are not there. Yes. And we need to be. So, Mr. Chair, I'd be honored to move this bill.
Okay. Any other comments?
I wanted to make a comment. I want to thank my constituent, Sam Sachs, and Representative Greenlick's constituent for bringing this bill to our attention so we could sponsor it. And I must say that it took a rather different path than I expected. Emily, my legislative assistant, was monitoring the House hearing and came back and said that it got an enthusiastic hearing, and in fact, not only did it pass unanimously, but the House committee extended it to not just football coaches, but to athletic directors, and did that expansion with amendment over there. And I was expecting that it would spark some very meaningful discussions, and coincidentally, I was on the House floor when Representative Greenlick carried the bill. And I meant to go back and listen to it again. Representative Maurer gave a very moving speech, and Dana's nodding. She might have heard that, in support of the bill. And it was very persuasive. And I believe that one of the things he said was what Sam said. Years from now, when we look back, we're going to say, it's too bad we needed that. And we'll maybe in the future not need it. But I also, along with Senator Morris, found the letters very persuasive, because I didn't know at the time that I put my name on this bill really what all the athletic directors would say. I thought maybe they would say, don't mess with what we're doing. We're doing a fine job, or stay out of our business, and we don't need this. But in fact, to see their support, I think is quite meaningful. So I'm happy to move this bill along, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz? Senator Metzger? Well, I think I did a similar reflection that Senator Morris had when I first saw this bill. I was not impressed, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought that guys who look like me probably are not the experts on barriers to hiring practices and discrimination. And when I started talking to coaches and ADs, I talked to Ernie Kent, and we have colleagues here. I talked to Senator Carter. We shared some of those similar stories that you shared. And so I think it does make some sense. And I don't think this is a burden. We have had support from the people who are going to be administering this. And the amendments, I think, clean up the bill. There was some push, I should tell you, from emails and editorials and what have you, to narrow this to just include football or to limit it to major sports. And in fact, I had a phone call where somebody said, because you're never going to find someone who's a minority to coach, for example, women's golf. And I shared this with Dana, and she clicked off Lorena Ochoa, Yancy Tang, and Nancy Lopez, Taiwanese, South Korean, and Hispanic, the top three women pro golfers. So,
Nancy Lopez retired, I think.
Well,
she was a great golfer.
She was. Yeah. But she's
so the point is I don't think this should be limited to just football. I mean, I think it's an issue that is probably greater than these categories that we have, and I think it also sends some a message about I guess on a broader scale about our value system in this state and what we're doing to create opportunity. And I don't think, in my view, government isn't a place where we solve everyone's problems, but it can be a place where we can provide opportunity so people can help solve problems on their own. And I think this falls into that category. I talked to the Senate president, and he said given these amendments that we have here, they're just new and hopefully will be adopted, that he would like them to breathe for a while before sending it to the floor. As you know, this committee shuts down today. So his preference, committee willing, is that we send this over to rules, where I've been assured it will be will receive a hearing and sent to the floor. So,
does he want you to adopt the amendment and then send it?
Yes. So, with that, Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3118.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3118. Any discussion? No. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3118 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation and a further recommendation that the bill be re-referred to the Rules Committee.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3118 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation and recommend that it be referred to the Rules Committee. Is there any discussion?
I'm disappointed. Candidly, I'm disappointed.
I have every belief, and it's my feeling to continue lobbying and working to make sure this gets to the floor. But I share that too.
Thank you.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Webster?
Aye.
Vice Chair Morris?
Aye.
Chair Haas?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration to be sent as amended to the Rules Committee.
Where Senator Metzger will see it again.
I will be there. All right, colleagues, that ends our work in the Senate Education and General Government Committee. It has been a wonderful session working with all of you.
It has.
I very much appreciate the patience you had with me, and I know that I've got a card out there for one more informal work session, and love to hear back from you to get a head count on that. Yeah.
Oh, thank this?
I'll be there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, absolutely.
You.
Aye. I vote aye.
You vote aye.
Vote
aye.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Unanimous.
Senator Cruz.
For your first gavel, and I think you did a wonderful job, and you were inclusive and considerate, and we had a lot of discussions on a lot of issues, and I truly appreciate your openness.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Well done.
Well done.
Thank you.
Right.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.